I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everybody. I have a returning guest, Lisa Deem, and she will be helping us at this time of the year. A lot of people celebrate Lent, and I will be celebrating it or observing it, maybe I should say, in a little bit of a different way this year, which we'll probably get into a little bit more in a minute. But welcome, Lisa. Thank you for coming back to the show.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here again, Lisa.
As we are in this period of time that precedes Easter, what can you tell us about the season of Lent and what you're doing to observe it this year?
Well, this year and most years, I am not really doing any extreme practices for Lent, extreme physical practices. Instead, I am doing some devotional reading this year and going more deeply into Christian history, which is a subject that I love, to help me prepare, you know, these 40 days for the death and resurrection of Jesus.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, we've already been into Lent for a little bit of time. It began on Ash Wednesday, which is February 14th, and some people listening might be observing Lent in a specific way, maybe abstaining from certain foods, or maybe walking through a devotional meditation every day or something. And some people might have been like, oh, it's Lent. I don't even know what that is. And what my hope was for this program today was to inspire people to look a little more deeply, maybe even just one day a week throughout this season, and reflect a little more deeply using some companions from the medieval period and seeing some of their words and using that as an inspiration and a comfort during this time to kind of draw more deeply into the tradition to get something enriching out of it. And that's why I thought this would be, you'd be the perfect guest for this. And I thought this would be really helpful. I know for me going through this time is what I'm actually going to be trying to do as well. And who are some of the people who have inspired you that you're going to be drawing on at this point?
Yeah, great question. Well, let me introduce the idea of wilderness as a way to talk about this, because Lent, as many of us know, is in part a reflection of the 40 days that Jesus spent in the wilderness. And so it's a good time to think about the wilderness areas in our own lives. And whether we like it or not, I think we all have those wilderness parts of us and of our lives. But I don't just mean the dry or arid parts of our life, but maybe the parts that need some stripping away so that we can make more room for Jesus. And I bring this up because a group of Christians from history that can help us think about this idea of the wilderness of our life are the desert mothers and fathers. This group of Christians, you know, went into a literal wilderness like Jesus did. They retreated to the deserts of Egypt beginning in around the 3rd century. And so they can help teach us about the wilderness and about how Jesus went into the wilderness and what we can do when we meet these parts of ourselves this season.
Yeah, there was one thing I was going to mention about that. In my somewhat limited understanding of the desert fathers and mothers and some of my reading, it seemed like when they went to the wilderness, that's when a time of a lot of turmoil would happen. Some talk about being really attacked by demons, or their struggles would come to the surface. And it seems like sometimes those periods are when all the stuff you've held at bay or not noticed might come up, and you'll think about it again and you'll be tormented by it. And it's when sometimes when we strip the things away from our regular life and actually have a wilderness to be in that trouble comes back up into our minds again, and that we need to confront it and deal with it. And, you know, it's really similar to what Jesus experienced too. When he was in the wilderness, then at the end, the devil comes to him and mm-hmm. gives him the temptations.
Yeah, and what's so interesting and fascinating to me is that the desert mothers and fathers actually sought that kind of situation out, almost as if they wanted to bring it to the surface, to be in a place, a physical place and a spiritual place where, I don't, maybe those demons had an opportunity to surface and they could deal with them that way. And so, you know, better prepare for letting more of Jesus in. I don't think most of us today, well, at least I don't want to seek that out, to seek out hardship, or to seek out trouble. You know, we have enough and we don't go looking for it. But we could still learn from, you know, from their experiences.
You know, one of the things I think is important to know and important to point out is that when we seek solitude and wilderness times, that if we find that trouble surfaces, that we shouldn't be surprised.
Absolutely. Because you're stripping away those things that distract us so much, all the noise, all the things, you know, that we, most of us have to live with. But, you know, the times that we can strip that away, and we're alone with ourselves and maybe alone with God. And so the things we push away in our busy daily lives are probably going to surface then.
Yeah, there was somebody I was listening to on a podcast, and he said he went on a 10-day retreat for the first time ever, but he was given nothing. So that meant no technology, but also no notebook or pencil or anything. So it was just... Just I can, thinking.
I can imagine no technology.
Right.
But I think it would be hard without a book or a notepad or a pencil.
And the whole idea was to be stripped bare. And his comment was, all the things you thought you dealt with come back, and you thought they were put away and they were figured out and finished. And lo and behold, there they are again. And you're confronted with them. And I think that's And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that could be the way of healing, and that could be the way that God meets you. But I think it's good to know that, let's say you take time for solitude and silence and wilderness with God, and then here come the things that you thought you dealt with, that is actually God's work. That's the grace of God coming in for healing and hopefully closer relationship with God.
Yes, it is. And that's kind of what I learned from the desert fathers and mothers. Sometimes we do, you know, seek that out through solitude or a retreat, like you mentioned. And sometimes wilderness, you know, we pass through just because that's what happens in life. Because it's difficult. But either way, I think the stories and the sayings of the desert fathers tell us that we can meet God in the wilderness of our life, whether we're there by choice or not, that he will be there. You know, he's just as much there as in the lush green oasis of our life. And that's really comforting.
Well, do you have anything you'd like to share in a reading?
Well, sure. Most of the wisdom of the desert fathers and mothers are collected in these really short sayings. I think they're actually called the Sayings of the Desert Fathers. And a lot of them are really short. It makes them sound almost like little sound bites. You savor them. They're really, there's a lot there, and they really, you know, add up to a lot of wisdom. We think about abstaining often during Lent, and certainly the Desert Fathers abstained from a lot in their life in the wilderness of Egypt. But sometimes abstaining or giving up can, you know, have a flip side, which is giving. And so I love this one saying by a desert father named Abba Chomai. And he said, "Do not let your hands be open to gather in. Let them rather be open to give." And I love that idea that if we're going to abstain or give something up, or sacrifice, maybe that's an opportunity to open our hands and to give.
Mm.
And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, there's something that seems impoverished about abstaining, but then if we think of relinquishing, we think of a different word of relinquishing.
Yes, yes.
It changes
it. Right. For Lent, a joke I like to make sometimes is, for Lent, I'm giving up. Full stop. Not giving up coffee, not giving up chocolate. I'm just giving up.
Right.
And sometimes that's what we need to do, maybe.
Yeah, right. We're just, I'm just turning it over.
Just giving it up.
Don't know what that means, but I'm just turning things over. Yeah, I like that. But sometimes that, I mean, I know, I'm sure you do it, I know I do it, is that there is an illusion of control that we think we have in our lives, right? We think we're holding on, we're holding very good grip to the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe Lent comes along or a time comes along and we go, maybe I shouldn't hold the steering wheel. And then you realize maybe it's a steering wheel. It's not connected to anything.
Right. Yeah. Just open your hands and give it up.
Yeah. This steering wheel doesn't even like, it's just stuck to nothing. You know, it's like this steering wheel wasn't even steering something. And who else has inspired you?
Well, one, if we want to move forward in time, a few centuries, into the kind of the high medieval period, one Christian from history I've been enjoying lately is a medieval contemplative or mystic named Haidovich of Antwerp. Now, she's probably pretty obscure in the canon of medieval mystics, but she's so interesting. So again, that name's Haidovich of Antwerp. And she lived in what is present-day Belgium in the 13th century, and she was probably a Beguine. And Beguines were religious orders for lay people. They lived similarly to a community of nuns, but they just didn't take formal vows. And Haidovich was a love mystic. And the reason I've been reading her this time of year is because, if you remember, it was so interesting this year that Ash Wednesday, mm-hmm. the beginning of the period of Lent, fell on February 14th, which was also Valentine's Day. So we had this really interesting mashup of this really syrupy holiday that's supposed to celebrate love, and then Ash Wednesday, the beginning of our Lenten journey. So I thought, what better poet and mystic to read than a love poet and a love mystic? What does she tell us about love during the season of Lent? And Haidovich wrote poetry in the tradition of courtly love, but it was about God's love that she wrote. And what I like is that she writes about how difficult God's love is. In fact, in her poems, Haidovich almost sounds like a jilted lover. So she doesn't gloss over it. She doesn't claim that it's easy or that it solves all our problems. Haidovich asks really hard questions like, what happens when loving God is hard or being loved by God is hard? So if you're someone who's ever wrestled with God, and with loving God, then she's a really good medieval mystic to read.
Hmm. So that's interesting. So she's really writing about struggle and faithfulness, you're saying.
Yes, and just how, you know, we talk about love like so easily and like it solves all problems. And we know that God is love, but it still can be difficult. So it's still a struggle that we can, you know, deal with during our journey.
Hmm. And I guess as a Beguine, this is like a begging order where they live in poverty and devote themselves to God in charity to the neighborhood, the town.
Yeah.
But also they're loving people, you know, 24 hours a day or their whole waking life. And they're denying themselves a typical life of getting married and having children until they decide that they might want to do that. But it's a life completely devoted to God, and that can
That's
be
true.
Very demanding.
Yes.
Hmm. Do you have anything to read from her?
I would love to read you a couple really short poems that she wrote, because she's best known for her love poetry. So in these poems, what we need to remember as I read them is that love is usually personified in her poems as if it's a person. And when we hear the word love in her poems, it usually means God's love. And she's just trying to draw closer to God and to experience and come to terms with his love. So remember that as I read this really beautiful poem about knowing love. I do not complain of suffering for love. It is right that I should always obey her, for I can know her only as she is in herself, whether she commands in storm or in stillness. This is a marvel beyond my understanding, which fills my whole heart and makes me stray in a wild desert. And so that poem ends with the image of the desert, which we just talked about with the Desert Fathers. And that's one reason I wanted to share it, is that God's love is kind of wild, and it might send us into those wilderness areas as we search for it.
You know, and that's interesting too. That makes me think about any kind of real love, that it's risky.
Yes.
You know, like yes. If you're talking about a really close friendship or relationship with a spouse or a partner, that if it's really love, then you're risking a lot, and you're putting your life, you're putting your heart in that person's hands, and it can be a wild, you know, it's a wild thing, you know, and you could get it really hurt.
Yeah. And we're putting ourselves, our love, in God's hands. Mm-hmm. And where does that send us sometimes? Mm-hmm. I'm on a wild search or a wild ride. Mm-hmm. Can I read you one more poem by Haydovich of Antwerp?
I would love it. She's good.
Okay.
She's a soul sister.
She is, isn't she? Here's another lovely short poem. In the beginning, love satisfies us. When love first spoke to me of love, how I laughed at her in return. But then she made me like the hazel trees, which blossom early in the season of darkness and bear fruit slowly. So in this poem, I love this sort of surprise turn at the end, where love satisfies us, and then we learn that love blossoms in a season of darkness and only bears fruit slowly. So it's not easy. Love comes slowly. It makes us wait. So I love how she turns that around. At first, it satisfies us, and then we realize that we may go through a period of darkness or really slow growth.
Wise words.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's really, you know, that there's something so universal too about that, whether you're talking about God or like I said before, whether you're talking about even just human love and connection, where you might be struck in a friendship, even a relationship, where it's like, oh, wow, you know, it's blooming, right?
Yes,
and you're like,
yes.
Oh, boy, this is, you know, a bloom in the darkness. And then you find out that the person is just as flawed as you are.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, okay. And then if you hold on and bear with them and they bear with you and there's grace, the slow fruit comes. And, you know, we're not really living in a time that is particularly good for waiting for slow fruit to ripen. You know, the times of not being able to as much, unless you really design your life around it, of like interactions on the internet and, you know, quick little things.
Yes.
And if you want to ghost somebody, you can easily do it. You know? But but the slow work of even with our children or spouse or friendships, you'd have to do that slow work of, you know, maintenance and consistency and showing up and being gracious and that mutuality there.
Yeah, it takes a lot of intention in today's, you know, really fast-paced world to realize that these things come slowly. Mm. Absolutely. Now, aren't those poems better than the silly love poems we read at Valentine's Day?
You know, the hearts, you know, the...
yes, I just love those love poems. Text me.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's really good reminder if someone's listening and they're in a friendship or they've had a friendship that they thought, hey, this is great, and it's kind of disappointing now, or we're in a dark period, but I really appreciate this person, that's normal. That's good. That's no problem. Like, it's not a problem to have problems.
Right. Take comfort, because mm-hmm. love bears fruit slowly.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times we think when we hit an obstacle in life, but certainly in relationships, when we hit an obstacle, oh no, it's all falling down around me. It's a fatal flaw, and this thing's going to blow up. It's like, mm-hmm. or you could think this is part of the growing process to ripening fruit that will really be satisfying long term, but you have to have some perspective. I'm really enjoying her. Have to really look her up over this whole season, I think. Is there a book or a resource place to find more of her writings?
Well, I know there might be a couple poems on Poetry Foundation, the website. And then, you know, probably some collected writings, but she is not super well known, not really popular like some of the other medieval mystics. So they might be a tad more difficult to find, but they are available. So check out, is that the website, poetryfoundation.org?
I'm pretty sure. And then how do you spell her name?
Her name is Hadewij, Hadewijch.
I'm glad I asked.
It's a silent J, Hadewij of Antwerp. Obscure, but really deserves to be better known, and is a great companion, I think, for Lent. And anytime you're thinking about, like you said, relationships or love, or how difficult and slow it all seems sometimes.
Yeah, and our relationship with God. I think that's the thing about a wilderness period with God. I'm just going to speak for myself here, but I've heard this from other people. And in Protestantism, there's a lot, and maybe this is true more universally even, but there's a lot of emphasis on feeling and experience. And when the feeling and experience isn't there, maybe God's far away, or maybe I'm far away from God, or who moved, you know. And just because you aren't feeling something, you aren't feeling close to God, or it feels like a wilderness place, that doesn't mean that there's a problem. It's just part of natural growth and spiritual formation. I think that we get that wrong a lot. That's something that the earlier Christians in tradition and the Catholic tradition has a little bit of a better handle on. And suffering is more, if you want to call it that, suffering or a dark periods, dark night of the soul, is more part of the spiritual journey, and also helps us identify with Christ. Then more recent Protestantism is much more like, might blame it on sin, or might blame, which mm-hmm. you know, could have a part of it. But if that's not the case, it's good to think that this time of blooming and darkness and the slow ripening of fruit relates very much to Lent and our times with God and our wilderness times, with maybe we feel alone in the wilderness and we feel like God might be far away.
Yeah, I so agree. I think often our default is that if things aren't going well, or if we're suffering, that God has somehow disappeared, that he's not there. But yeah, some of these the desert fathers and someone like Hadewij, who's suffering for love, help us see that maybe that's when he's most present, is in the wilderness. But we sort of don't think to look for him there.
Well, I hope this brings comfort to people in Lent. Do you have anybody else that you wanted to share?
Well, sure. Let's talk about one more good companion for mm-hmm. the journey. Since Lent is, in a way, a journey, like Jesus's journey into the wilderness, I find a lot of meaning reading about pilgrimage, sacred journeys, and especially the idea of spiritual pilgrimage. So that the whole idea that we can definitely take a real physical pilgrimage, but that we can also take this kind of journey in our life of faith. And there is a wonderful English mystic named Walter Hilton, and he lived in the 14th century. And he said that in our spiritual lives, we should imagine that we are pilgrims. So that, and he was writing to people of his own time, but that we can, we also can imagine that we're like a medieval pilgrim who is on her way to Jerusalem. And that's great for Lent because we're preparing to go to Jerusalem with Jesus to, you know, remember his crucifixion and to celebrate his resurrection. You know, so at a time when we're preparing for Jerusalem, what would it be like to imagine that we're a pilgrim on this road? And what I like about this image again is its honesty. Because pilgrims, especially in the Middle Ages, but even today, a pilgrim has it rough. Mm. So it's not necessarily an easy or romantic journey. And Walter Hilton, our mystic, says that we are going to have the same kinds of troubles that physical pilgrims might have on our spiritual journey. So we will meet enemies, like those demons we talked about with the Desert Fathers. We might meet enemies. We might be robbed, just like a physical traveler. We will want to turn back because it's all going to seem too difficult, and our destination seems too far away. But Hilton urges us to keep going on our journey. Like a pilgrim doesn't give up, a pilgrim doesn't turn back, and neither should we. Mm. And what I really like, or one thing I like about this, is that Hilton gives us, as spiritual pilgrims, a kind of mantra to say, to give us courage on our journey. And this is a Christian mantra, and I think it's a little bit like the Jesus Prayer, a short saying that you can repeat to help you through the day. So the Jesus Prayer is, "What Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me, a sinner." Is that right?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
The Jesus Prayer. And Hilton has a little Christian mantra for pilgrims. And his mantra goes, "I am nothing, I have nothing, I desire nothing but the love of Jesus alone." And Hilton actually says in his spiritual treatise that we can repeat this phrase when our journey gets difficult and when we're ready to give up, to just say this little mantra, "I am nothing, I have nothing, I desire nothing but the love of Jesus alone." And saying that just reminds us of the goal of our journey. Not that we're down on ourselves, "I am nothing," but that our ultimate desire and goal is the love of Jesus, and that that's where we're headed to during Lent and at other times of the year too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, a really good practice for Lent, is to think, you know, I'm a pilgrim on my way to Jerusalem, and I know it's rough, and I can remind myself through this Christian mantra to keep going on my road.
There's two points that I would like to speak to on that. One is that in the United States, at least, this program goes all over the world, but we are really hesitant sometimes to say something like "I am nothing" because it seems to be so down on ourselves. But I think in this case, it's really like you're getting out of the way so that God's work can be done. It's like getting rid of the ego and the ambition that we have of our own, our selfish ambition that gets in the way of God's work.
Right.
And the other thing is that the goal of the journey is never the point. It's always the journey that's the point. The journey itself is what changes us, not getting to wherever the end is. And that's kind of what people say who have actually gone on pilgrimages, you know, taken the Camino de Santiago, and they'll all say the same thing. You know, "I thought it was about this, but it was actually about this." Mm-hmm. "And I learned this along the way, and I got blisters, and then this happened." And it's so interesting, but we are all on a pilgrimage, and it might get accentuated more so during more intense times of wilderness or Lenten times when we're really drilling down into meaning and looking at things more fully focused, and it'll seem more like a pilgrimage and more intensified. But this is the journey. This is it.
Yes.
This is what it's all about. We're not waiting for something. And this is the moments that you seize right now. We're not, in a sense, we're not waiting, like heaven's not the goal. This right now is the goal. And so I love the idea that of thinking of each moment or each day as the thing itself.
Yeah, each day is right, part of that journey, part of that step that we're taking. That's where we are right now. And I agree with all that. I love it. And I would say that it is the journey, and that for me, partly it's also the destination. Mm-hmm. If we're trying to draw near to Jesus, that you know, is, maybe we can think of that as an achievable goal, or you know, something that we can reach, maybe at the end of our lives, or even every day when we try to come to Him in prayer, you know, and then He comes to meet us too, that we can reach a destination. But also that absolutely every day is part of the journey, and that absolutely teaches us each day.
Well, as you engage with some of this material, do you feel a sense, does it give you a sense that God is closer, or how is it that you land on that sense for yourself?
It gives me a sense that I'm not alone. And I know that I'm not alone because I live in the present too, and have a church and wonderful friends, but somehow drawing on the strength of people that have gone before me on this journey, really, I feel like they lend me their strength, and that I feel more rooted, that I'm not just trying to make it all up as I go along, but that I have, you know, this wonderful Christian tradition or just rootedness to be grounded in, that, you know, it's like the community of saints. Sometimes they're pilgrim saints or the mystic saints, or the desert saints, that people to journey with.
Yeah, the brothers and sisters, the cloud of witnesses that yes. has already walked on the path, and the path is worn a little bit so we can see where to go, kind of.
Yeah, it's a beautiful image.
I really appreciate their work that's gone before us, and also that people know about it, have studied it, and can bring it back up, because we do get kind of short-sighted. We don't think about the richness of history and the richness of the devoted that have gone before. Sometimes we just think about, you know, what's been published in the last 2 years or something.
That's true.
What's been tweeted about in the last 2 days. But it is enriching and rooting. And I think that as people shift, in this country, you hear a lot about, the nuns, the people who don't claim any affiliation or something like that. That is an American, basically Western problem. There are people in the world who are getting deeply rooted into old traditional religious connections and find a lot of vibrancy in them. Mm-hmm. And in many places in the world, religion is growing by leaps and bounds, and different religious traditions, but the oldest ones in Catholicism. And I think that you also see that people are returning to Orthodox Christianity and Catholic traditions. And I really think it's because there's so many of the other things that have gone to the wayside that we can't sort of trust in anymore, like mm-hmm. Government or different family institutions that have broken down, and people feel a bit afloat and disconnected. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you realize there is, you know, couple thousand years of rich Christian tradition that the devoted have used and relied on, and gone with the Bible and found such comfort and solace, and through that spiritual formation have grown in faith and intimacy with God. It really is a comfort, but it's also there is a kind of spiritual companionship, and I think that's important for people to realize that that's available. That those resources are available, and they're close at hand.
Yes, yeah. And I love what you said about how, you know, we're walking a path that's a little bit worn because of all the people from history that have gone before us, so we can find the path. So we know that we're rooted in this wonderful past, and yet it always somehow seems new. I think because these Christians from history, the mystics and the desert fathers, they lived in such a different time period. Of course, they expressed themselves differently than we would today. And so when we read them, it sounds new and fresh. It's a different way of thinking. And I'm always surprised by an image I read, you know, by that love poetry of Haydovich. That's, you know, not like nothing I would ever have thought of. So it's old, and yet it always seems new somehow.
Well, do you have any final words of wisdom about how to journey through Lent, or where to find some of these resources, or any other parting words that can help guide people through this season?
Mostly have courage on your journey through Lent, because as we journey to God, He comes out to meet us. And there's not anywhere you can go that He won't be. And so one thing, I've never been huge on some of the extreme practices of Lent, giving things up or renouncing. And I think those are fine. But I would encourage people not to beat yourselves up about what you're doing or not doing for Lent, and to, you know, just keep on the journey and know that God is meeting you there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If the point of Lent is to come into fellowship with God and appreciate God's grace and feel loved by God, then there shouldn't be some part of it that makes you feel alone or abandoned or somehow ashamed or despised by God. If that's happening, right, then probably stop that.
Oh, probably not.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, my friend and I, in like the fourth grade, we used to give up Carmex for Lent. You know, the medicated lip balm.
No.
So we gave up Carmex and chocolate and thought we were so good. But, you know, for me now, instead of giving up something like that in that way, I like to add something, you know, to add some devotional reading or to dig deeply into history, maybe discover a new mystic or a new contemplative. And so that's how I do Lent now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because sometimes renouncing something will draw your attention in a very helpful way, but also sometimes drilling down your attention is also just as powerful. So it can be a combination. And I think whatever you decide to do if you have that focus and attention on it, it can be a very powerful time, whatever it might be. And I think some people are like, oh, I'm not doing anything. It's too much. It's, you know, it's too taxing on me. It requires too much. But it really doesn't. It's just a matter of turning your attention towards something. I like the idea of doing it at Advent, before 40 days before Christmas and 40 mm-hmm. days before, just those two times a year. Mm-hmm. As I've been observing those times, it's been incredibly enriching. I ask myself a lot of important questions, and I find that my inner world is deepened and strengthened, and my relationships are deepened and strengthened by those times. It's very fruitful. It's just my encouragement to anybody who's listening to, and even if you're listening and not a Christian, that you could link this with the seasons of spring and spring coming in your heart, or just wherever you're at, take some time to drill deeper into your inner world and connect to love.
Yes, absolutely. And I loved your Advent podcast on fasting and preparing. That was so wonderful. By the way.
Thanks, Lisa. One more thing I wanted to ask is, do you have any ideas about resources for books or places online where people can get some of these things?
The Sayings of the Desert Fathers are pretty widely available in book form and online. So those will be easy to find. If you want to read a little bit more about Haydovich of Antwerp and her amazing love poetry, You could start with my website, which is thecontemplativewriter.com, simply because I recently have shared some of her poetry there, and I have a few links at the end of the poems to the sources. You could be taken directly there, you know, it, either to a book on Amazon or to a website, like a poetry website that's sharing her work.
And also, I want you to mention your book, too. People listening to this might have not heard your last episode. Would you just, you could do a quick commercial on your book.
My book is called A World Transformed, Exploring the Spirituality of Medieval Maps. And that is about the tradition of world maps around the year 1300 that put the city of Jerusalem and the cross of Christ at the center of the world, and how these maps can show us how to be centered in our life and on our journey that we take through the world every day.
Yeah, and it is good. I love it. I love it. Oh, and I love maps, so I was sucked in immediately, of course. But
oh, maps are great. And there's pilgrimage in there, which we talked about today.
Yeah.
Such a part of the medieval world.
Yeah, and the maps are so weird, though. Like, anybody who's listening to this, you're just not going to, you're not going to believe how weird these maps are with these like naked people and monsters. I'm not going to spoil it, but
no, that is the very best part of them.
I know
how weird they are.
Yeah. And they were not afraid of nudity. So what I was like, okay, well, fine then. But yeah, it's just it was a world that I really wasn't looking at very carefully. I mean, I studied some things in art history, but I was not looking real carefully at those maps. So that was good. And you can also listen. I'll put a link in the show notes to this, to the episode that we did together on that book itself.
Yeah,
and then
great.
People can hopefully look up your book and get more information about that, because that's really good. And I don't want anybody to be terribly jealous, but we're going to be roommates and the upcoming Festival of Faith and Writing, and that will be fun. And I'm sure people listening to this will probably, some of those people will be going to that too. So that should be a fun upcoming event.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Yeah, it'll be really awesome. What a lineup of speakers that's going on there.
I know.
Well, thank you so much for being my return guest. And I hope this is really helpful to people this season coming up to Easter. I really think it's a great time to sit down with old friends, old companions from the past, and look more deeply into devotional readings that we might not otherwise be aware of. So thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you. I always love talking with you.
If you've listened to the show and you've thought, wow, I wish I could find out a little bit more about someone mentioned or a book or a website, that's what show notes are for. I've created an all-access pass, and you can access the access pass for just $1. It unlocks all show note episodes, too. It's a reoccurring $1 a month, and you can cancel at any time. Just go to patreon.com/sparkmymuse. Patreon is like patron with an E. patreon.com/sparkmymuse. Remember to subscribe to the show on iTunes or your podcast app, and I invite you to sign up for my newsletter at sparkmymuse.com. I try to send out a message once or twice a month. If you enjoyed the show, please rate it on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening.